you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. Hope your day's off to a strong start. We have a jam-packed program for you today. Coming up next hour, we'll talk with former LAPD chief and former New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton. His new memoir is out, titled The Profession. We'll be talking with him about his tenure in LA as well as in New York and get his thoughts about the state of law enforcement today. But on the subject of law enforcement, we begin with the current Los Angeles County District Attorney, George Gascón. Mr. Gascón, good to have you with us again on Air Talk.
Good morning, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. Let's start first with the political side of this. Petitions being circulated in an effort to recall you as district attorney. There is a competing movement, stand with Gascón, to try and fight back against the recall. First of all, what do you think about the recall effort, and who do you see as your critics?
Yeah, you know, Larry, when you look, what we're seeing is that the people that are supporting the recall are not interested in public safety. You know, they want me to put kids in adult prison. They would like to see the gas chamber back again. They want to see death penalty working. They're really interested in punishment as opposed to safety. And then when you look at the funding and the organization, what you're seeing is very conservative, right-wing people, much like we see in other parts of the country, trying to undo the results of an election. So we have a guy named Jeffrey Palmer, who is a discredited developer here in L.A. County, who gave the Trump campaign $2 million last year, is a mega donor to the Republican Party. We have former District Attorney Steve Cooley, very conservative Republican. You know, we have police unions involved. So it's very clear, A, what they want, and B, who is coming from. And it's not about safety, it's about punishment.
Now, you, though, have no confidence votes from 17 cities, and they include hardly far-right cities, Pico Rivera, which is a predominantly Latino community, Azusa, predominantly Latino community, Santa Fe Springs, similarly. They're in the mix with other cities of very mixed populations, communities that vote consistently Democratic, not for President Trump. So how do you characterize the recall as being largely Trump supporter, right-wing driven, when you've got these no confidence votes from cities that don't fit that profile?
Well, I mean, you have to look at the organization, right, and the people that are driving this. And, you know, we have our county sheriff, after I refuse to join him on a quote-unquote public integrity crusade that was targeting only his political enemies, joined this effort. And we have seen on contract cities where they're being policed by the sheriff department. We've seen sheriff management, including the sheriff, go into this city councils and, you know, passing a tremendous amount of misinformation. But again, when you look at the structure of the recall, you know, Jeff Palmer, very clearly who he is. Steve Cooley, very clearly who he is. Dennis Zine, very clearly who he is. All these are very tied Republicans. Dennis Zine was former director of the Los Angeles Police Protective League. We see police unions. We see interests that are mainly driven around incarceration and punishment. And when you see the stance and what I'm being criticized for, is I'm being criticized for not sending kids to adult prison, for not following the death penalty, you know, for in issues of police accountability. So, yes, you are correct. There are some of these places that are being influenced by this process, but you have to look at what is driving it.
Okay, but I guess I'm trying to draw the distinction between people who support your recall and the actual organizers you're talking about of the recall effort. For example, with the cities that I was talking about, the city councils have cited such things as your policies on bail, what they're concerned about with the not charging enhancements in crimes that they think is going to lead to people getting out of prison earlier, what they think are higher crime rates that they see as subsequent to your policy shifts with the DA's office. So, you know, what's your response to that specific critique, separate and apart from the organizers of the recall?
And I'm glad that you bring out the issue of crime, Larry, because it's really important. Prior to COVID, LA County saw an increase in the last 7 years of 25% in violent crime. We never saw the hue and cry from the sheriff department or some of the folks that are driving some of this. Pre-election, last year, homicides went up in the county. I have been in office for 6 months, and actually, the day after I was sworn in, the recall process began, and they were told they have to wait 90 days. You could hardly say that my policies are causing an increase in crime. When you look at the last 7 years of increase in violent crime in the county, the spike on homicides last year, and I've only been in office for 6 months. It is disingenuous to say that the current increases, which, by the way, are going around the nation, are somehow driven by the policies that I implemented in the last 6 months.
Let's talk about those increases, particularly in gun crimes. What do you think is taking place? Yesterday we talked with Chief Moore, and he cited a number of different factors, but I'm curious in your analysis of that.
Look, I think that there are many factors, and I would say, first of all, I don't think anybody has the answer to all of this. I think there's a combination of things. We have a proliferation of guns in this country and certainly in our community that continues to skyrocket. Now, not only do we have guns that are being manufactured by legitimate manufacturers, but now we have homemade guns, or the quote-unquote ghost guns, where people are buying the parts separately. They're assembling the guns, and the guns are untraceable. We have a tremendous amount of trauma and displacement that has occurred in the last year and a half as a result of COVID. We have huge economic issues. We have tremendous problems with mental health. We have people that should never own a gun or be in possession of a gun that have guns. And when they are angry, they are, you know, they're reflecting that anger and they have a firearm. I think that, you know, there are many layers to this. And it's hard to say that it's only one thing. Clearly, the main driver is the fact that we have way too many guns available and way too many guns in the hands of our own people. And that is undeniable. But behind that, there are many other conditions that are both social, economic, and public health issues that are driving so much of this. And unless we take a holistic view to this work, which is what I'm trying to do by creating our cover, which is our crime violence reduction unit, which working in partnership with Chief Moore and the LAPD on the first three areas that we're picking up, we're bringing in not only prosecutors and investigators from both the police and the DA's office, but we're also bringing public health officials, we're bringing social services, we're bringing community involvement and community intervention. You know, we have to deal with this both from the prevention, the interruption, and obviously arrest and prosecution when it's absolutely necessary. But to try to attach the epidemic of gun violence that we have in our country that is increasing almost on a weekly basis. We're having more mass shootings every week, and it's happening both in red and blue jurisdictions. So you can't even say it's because of the political orientation of a particular jurisdiction. Is driven by many factors that are way beyond law enforcement.
Certainly the mass shootings are terrible and shock the senses of the country. The actual numbers, of course, you know, related to gun violence are not in those high profile cases, but the kinds of things we see occurring across the country on a daily basis. Your critics say that one of the things that makes it easier for people to commit gun violence is to get out earlier, to not have enhancements for crimes that involve use of a gun. What's your response to that, people who say your policies are going to make gun crimes more likely?
Let's assume for a moment that that were to be correct. I think that we have to kind of look behind the curtain. What they're talking about is the difference between my sending someone to prison for 20 years or 25 and sending the person to prison for life without the possibility of parole. People are going to prison. They're going to prison for extended periods of time for crime and violence. So if, in fact, And I disagree, by the way, and there's a lot of evidence to point against that. But let's say that they were right for a moment. The reflection of that policy would not occur for another decade, two or three decades down the road. Because those people that they're complaining they're not going to prison for long enough periods of time, they're going to jail and or they're going to prison for 25 years to life, 30 years to life, 10 years. So they are now incarcerated when they get arrested and prosecuted. So if, in fact, they were correct, that would be something that would take decades to see whether that would be the case, which, by the way, all the science and all the data points against that.
So it sounds like your sort of overarching argument is that this criticism of you is not grounded in reality, because even if you accept the premise in all these different cases, there simply hasn't been enough time to pass to pin any of what's going on to your specific policies.
That is absolutely correct.
All right. We're talking with L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon with us on Air Talk. District Attorney, share with us a bit about your special prosecutor and the police shooting panel, how that is going to work. They're not going to, as I understand it, tell you what to do as to whether an officer should be prosecuted. But how much weight are you going to give the analysis that's provided by that panel?
Yeah, and let me separate the two, Larry, because while they are their parallel efforts, they're a little different. So the special prosecutor, who is a former U.S. attorney, a civil rights attorney, who successfully prosecuted the Rodney King officers years ago on a federal case, has been contracted through a contract that the Board of Supervisors approved, and he just actually the contract was finalized about a week, 10 days ago. And his work is going to be looking at a set of specific cases where he will evaluate and determine whether those cases should be prosecuted. Those were cases that the prior administration deemed to be lawful and that I review and I have disagreements with, but I wanted to make sure that I had an independent review of that. That's what the special prosecutor is doing. The fact group of this advisory group that is looking at about 600 shootings, they're taking a look back to 2012, from 2012 to 2020, and looking at cases where the office has already adjudicated the case. So they're not cases that are pending adjudication by the office. The officer adjudicated, determined them to be lawful, and they're working in conjunction with the clinic at the University of California Irvine Law School. They are screening through those cases, and they're looking at cases that may have evidence that was overlooked by the original investigation or concerns about the way the adjudication came about. And those cases then will be brought to my attention with their comments and observations, and then I will review and I will make a determination whether we would need, whether we should go in a different direction or whether they should continue to stay as it was originally determined.
Okay. Back to this. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
No, I was going to say, additionally to that, we're adding resources to our regular JSIC, which is the unit that does the review of police uses of force and allegations of police criminal conduct on duty. We're adding resources to that. So prospectively, the office is also looking at, you know, at many of these incidents. And, you know, quite frankly, the workload is significant under working from those cases. So you have basically have three efforts. You have the office. We've added resources to look at the work prospectively. You have the special prosecutor specifically looking at some cases, and then we have the advisory group with the law school taking kind of a broad look going back to 2012.
We're talking with L.A. County District Attorney George Gascon on Air Talk. In regard to the special prosecutor, you promised during your campaign for office that these cases that he's been given would be closely scrutinized. There are four police shooting cases in particular that the special prosecutor is looking at, but the statute of limitations has expired. So what went wrong that those four cases that you'd said were going to be looked into then couldn't be looked into?
Well, actually, I really welcome this question because it's good to clarify what is what the statute of limitation on the manslaughter charge expire in three of those cases and will expire shortly on the other one. That's a six-year statute. Those cases were sitting under the prior administration. The prior administration deemed them to be lawful. When I campaigned, I said I would bring a special prosecutor to look at those cases. We identified an individual. We went through the contracting process. The contract was approved by the Board of Supervisors on March 21st. Two of those cases, their statute for the manslaughter charge expired in April. The contract was not actually signed, completed until about a week ago. So it would have been impossible. And we knew that going in, that we did not have enough time to look through the manslaughter lens. But at least at first phase, you know, there may be other tools there. But the murder charges have not expired. There is no statute of limitation of murder. And that is the area where the special prosecutor will be evaluating as well, as he will be evaluating other tools and see what else can be done.
All right.
There's nothing that went wrong. It's just simply an operation of time.
Yesterday, as I mentioned to you earlier, we had Chief Moore on the program, and he criticized your zero bail policy. He said it goes too far because it now includes crimes like felony assault. He said of the people being arrested for felonies and released on zero bail, 20 to 25 of them are getting arrested every week for a felony similar to what they were first arrested for. Your response to what the chief detailed?
Well, I mean, first of all, multiple things here. So the policy that I implemented in December is now state law, right? So under the Humphrey decision, the state Supreme Court ruled a few weeks ago that actually we cannot give anyone bail larger than what they can afford unless we can prove through an evidentiary hearing that the individual, that there are no lesser intrusive ways of keeping the person from being dangerous to the other. You're talking about a county where we have hundreds and thousands of arrests every month. When we have bail, people still get released sometimes and they will go back and reoffend. In fact, about 10 to 12% of all the homicides in this country are committed by people that would have been released in bail. So there's no connection between bail and dangerousness to the community. Bail is only, quite frankly, an economic measure that dictates how much money you have in your bank account, whether you're going to get out or not, regardless of whether you're dangerous. What we have to do collectively, and that involves the police, that involves my office and the bench, is when we have people that we believe to be dangerous, not simply in a wholesale approach, but those that we have articulable reasons to hold them behind or to create more restrictive measures of release, that we do so. But that has no connection with money bail whatsoever. And even if you disagree with my policy, it's important that for everyone, including the chiefs, to understand actually that is the state law now. The Supreme Court ruled on it that you cannot hold people on bail that they cannot afford unless you can show that they're dangerous. And that requires an evidentiary hearing beyond what the underlying charge is.
District Attorney Gascon, thank you, sir, for being with us again. We appreciate it very much. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thank you so much, Larry. And you take care of yourself.
Thank you very much. District Attorney George Gascon, L.A. County, D.A. It's Air Talk on KPCC. Coming right up, it's Dr. Shruti Gohill, UC Irvine School of Medicine. She's professor and expert on infectious diseases. We have much to talk with her about on COVID-19 and vaccination. Back with her in just 1 minute.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.